welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And welcome back. And it is now or never. And that debt is fraud. I can't... let me just hit some highlights of support because I tend to forget these things, and they're equally important as this little diatribe at the beginning. We need your help in supporting Jerry Wistrand. So please reach out. The contact information is on the candidate endorsement page on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. In other words, you can go straight to his page, you know, contribute directly to him. He needs financial help in fighting the party and just becoming a true champion for the Constitution. I would just beg and implore everybody to, you know, give him $5. If we had, you know, 100 people that gave him $500, that would get his travel costs easily covered, his communication costs. It still doesn't give him main advertising. He's got to get this message out. The primary is coming up, I think. I don't know, maybe June, I think. So this is a statewide race, and we're running out of time. And there's going to be other candidates that I'm going to beg and plead that you support. Don't send me – I've gotten people, oh, how do I buy your book and all this stuff? I don't let you. If you want to actually support the cause, get these champions elected. Help get the message out as these people actually take office and they start talking and leading – by using the Constitution as a weapon. This can't be done by this show, by me alone. We need these people in office. We need people in the party to start supporting all of this. We need you. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. That sounds probably familiar for those people who actually listen to the entire show and hear that last line, because that's the last thing I say every show. So please, please, send Jerry love. If you can send him regular love, monthly, weekly, whatever, there's no doubt in my mind he would appreciate that. And when we really look at the overall, in the big picture, if everybody was sending him $20 a week, $20 a month, whatever you can afford, that's how, what was that stupid congressman, the communist, Bernie? Bernie Sanders was making all sorts of bank off of kids living in their parents' house. And I get it that they didn't have jobs and anything else, but they were still giving what they had to Bernie because they believed in Bernie's communism, socialism solutions. We have to have equal faith and belief in the Constitution of those champions that are willing to take this stand. And Jerry is really putting it out there in taking on the Republican Party, so he needs your help. Anyway, with that, I also want to emphasize the fact that we have a regular prayer circle meeting. If you want to participate, you don't want to necessarily host one. If you want to host one, let me know. I'd love to have 5. I'd love to have 10. I'd say, hey, we got 10. We got 100. Learn, pray, act. And praying as a group is an effective way of actually coming together, building, you know, the spiritual, I'll call it, you know, not brotherhood or sisterhood, but it's a spiritual family that we can kind of grow existentially. But anyway, the last thing I want to focus is we need to start helping everybody understand compliance of the Constitution is foremost. And these documents we're covering right now are helping you see exactly what we have to do. As a matter of fact, we were just going into break or just ending the show when we were talking about nullification and how Thomas Jefferson literally said, it's every state's right to do this. But to be clear, they weren't seeking to actually nullify as a single state. They were demanding nullification be forced upon Congress because the parties have that power. They have that authority. So with that, with 4 minutes into this show almost, it gives me time to now get more time into content. But let's find out if we got any go-backs or anything else. So let me start with Tammy, because I think we were kind of going to you, and the music kicked in as perfect timing, apropos. So any go-backs? Anything else you want to bring up? Go ahead.
No, I mean, the last thing that we just covered is basically the whole reason we're doing what we're doing, because
yes,
states can interpose,
yes,
and then request that Congress nullify.
Yes, demand that they nullify or be removed. Absolutely. So we get into this in Republic Review. This Republic Review is not what GR says it is, it's what the state legislatures say it is. And when they use the full force of the Constitution, they can start pulling back every person in Congress, whether it's the House or the Senate. And believe you me, when it comes down to full compliance of the Constitution, the state actually has the ability to pull back anybody that's representing that state, either in either House of Congress, for failing to fulfill their oath of office. They can enforce Section 3 of the 14th Amendment. It'd be great if our president would do that. But anyway, okay, so Sean, any go-backs, any other things? Go ahead.
Along those lines, like you're saying, if our president would step up and actually enforce that amendment, Amendment 14, Section 3, there's some very good candidates out there, just like we were talking about, the person that ambushed the illegal immigrant who ambushed the guardsman in Washington, D.C., actually was brought into the country and dropped in Washington State, and he traveled all the way to Washington, D.C. to do what he did.
And then you have... Yeah, go ahead. Keep going.
You have Tim Walz and the over billion-dollar fraud that's going on, bilking the Medicaid system with illegal immigrants.
There you go. So... Jay Ferguson, or not Jay Ferguson, that's a kind of a combination of Jay Inslee and Bob Ferguson. These two culprits that have been managing this insurrection out of Washington State for well over a decade, they should be held accountable. As a matter of fact, Trump has all the authority, the Justice Department has all the authority to just come in and grab Ferguson and Inslee and basically have them completely removed, that they are no longer able to function in any public office of profit or trust, period. None. They are out. I know Jay Inslee moved from Seattle into Idaho because I think he's over here in Coeur d'Alene, and he's looking for an opportunity to possibly run as president. The interesting thing is that he's in Coeur d'Alene, which is... One would think is Idaho is a red state. Most people don't know that Idaho is getting compromised more and more under the guise or under this facade of conservative Republicans. Washington had a strong conservative movement. Washington was red at the turn of the millennium. In other words, the early 2000 to 2006 or something, when Dino Rossi was elected as the Republican governor, and the Democrats kept on showing up with more ballots and more ballots and more ballots. And then after that, when the Democrats, because the Democrats basically stole that election with voter fraud and election fraud, physical voter fraud, election fraud with ballots, and they moved the state into going into full-fledged absentee ballots. In other words, everybody voted by mail, where they could actually maintain full control over the state. And nobody's doing anything about it. Trump wants to do things about it. I would love to see Trump do things that are constitutional about it instead of becoming the tyrant of today. The tyrant du jour, I should say. Anyway, so what we're doing here is we're covering the Kentucky resolution still. We're in the throes of the eighth resolution, my bad. And Tammy was kind of reading these, and she'd been covering this this sentence so far. And it may have actually gone into two sentences by now. But anyway, so we're down at a point where we just closed off the powers exercised under it. In other words, we're now going to start off with Congress being not a party. And Sean, if you could go ahead and pick that part up, and just read to the point of that second, third line down, created and modified, because I definitely want to make a lot of hay out of this very first part of this line here. Go ahead.
Congress being not a party, but merely the creature of the compact, and subject as to its assumptions of power to the final judgment of those by whom and for whose use itself and its powers were all created and modified.
Okay, so right there, he tells you, and this is probably the best label that we could use for the federal government, the creature. It was created by the states in the Constitution that they submitted for themselves. They created this Constitution to create a brand new government. And that government was identified, and its roles, responsibilities, powers, properties, criminal jurisdiction, restrictions, as well as even property. I think I even mentioned that. So, and the standards. In other words, what were the requirements for being in office? They laid everything into this thing to say, this is how you are going to function. This is the only authority you have. So, in other words, they created this creature. Instead of putting out an RFP, a request for a bid, and a proposal for a bid to do work or to, you know, for a company to come in and be a subcontractor, they created these offices and the branches of government and so forth to where these seats were going to be filled either by elections or by appointments. So in other words, this creature was created. These seats are all a part of the Constitution. Those people filling those seats are making choices every day to whether they're going to fulfill their oath to serve the Constitution and support it, or whether they are going to actually violate it and give aid and comfort to those others who are also violating the Constitution. They have a choice, and we need to make it hard for them. That's why, you know, he just said what he just said. So now that we've got him, you know, laying it out that this is the creature, this is not our master. We are the master, and that's what he's basically laying, and subject as to its assumptions of power to the final judgment of those by whom, for whose use itself and its powers were all created and modified. In other words, he's talking about the states. The states are the parties to the compact. Okay, so from that point, let's keep going. And for all intents and purposes, while hopefully Sean's still there, but for all intents and purposes, Sean, because there's nothing really highlighted in this part, I will just have to try to prod you or, you know, I don't want to be rude, but I'll probably end up having to, because this is a lot of no highlights here. And this is a very meaty part of this resolution, or I should say the resolutions, because this is where Thomas Jefferson is schooling everybody. This is what we got to do. So go ahead and pick it up from there.
That if the acts before specified should stand, these conclusions would flow from them. That the general government may place any act they think proper on the list of crimes and punish it themselves, whether enumerated or not enumerated by the Constitution, as cognizable by them. That they may transfer its cognizance to the president or any other person who may himself be the accuser, counsel, judge, and jury, whose suspicions may be the evidence, his order the sentence, his officer the executioner, and his breast the sole record of the transaction, that a very numerous and valuable description of the inhabitants of these states being, by this president, reduced as outlaws to the absolute dominion of one man, and the barrier of the Constitution thus swept away from us all. No ramparts now remains against the passions and powers of a majority in Congress to protect from a like exportation or other more grievous punishment the minority of the same body, the legislatures, judges, governors, and counselors of the states, nor their other peaceable inhabitants who may venture to reclaim the constitutional rights and liberties of the states and people, or for who other causes, good or bad, may be obnoxious to the views or marked by the suspicions of the president, or be thought dangerous to his or their election, or other interests, public or personal.
Okay, so right there, that's a good spot to stop. I was looking for a better spot, but anyway, going back up, you know, Thomas Jefferson is really, wow, I mean, he's laying it out there, and he basically lays it out here. He says, and the barrier of the Constitution thus swept away from us all, no ramparts, in other words, no more fortifications, no more protections remain. Now, let me ask you, and Tammy, what do you think? Do you believe that what he's saying there, that this is, these acts are obliterating the Constitution and everything that we know?
Yeah, 100%.
Well, so, okay. See, I disagree, but I believe they set the stage, because once you break the barrier, the decay begins, and it opens the door for utter destruction. But we look today at the fact that we still have the ability to bring this nation back from the brink it is at today. And we've gone much further than they at this time, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Sure. So what I'm trying to point out here is it's not that he's not making a very strong case. It's very strong. And that he is laying out that this is the opening to our destruction. But it's a little bit hyperbole, if that makes sense. In other words, I think,
yeah.
Do you see my point? And
I see your
point. And so, but the whole point, and this kind of goes in line with the way Madison used hyperbole with regard to the cod fishery bounties, where he, mm-hmm. Said, hey, you let them use the, taxation and spending money on whatever they want. The next thing you know, they're going to give us schools. They're going to give us churches. They're going to take everything from us, and everybody gets aghast. I venture to think that was just a common mechanism. Today we call it shock value, like a shock jock, right? Or shock TV. Everybody probably remembers the time when Jerry Springer, I forget what it was, but I mean, everybody was shocked what happened on Jerry Springer back in the 1980s. It was just like the first time I think somebody assaulted somebody, or I forget what it was. And somebody could probably look it up of, that atrocious moment of the Jerry Springer show. But he was
Geraldo got hit by a chair.
Something like that. There was this crossing of the line where sensationalism and the heating of passions got so far out of hand that it was beyond control. And so we kind of look at, that as, well, that's shock, that's a shock jock. That's a shock value. I, a lot of times, feel like what I have to say lands like a shock value. I think I'm tame compared to Thomas Jefferson. I'm definitely not as eloquent as him, but I don't believe I am going well beyond. As a matter of fact, I am telling you, we still have hope. Thomas Jefferson, in some cases, is really speaking, it's now or die, and I leave the show off with it's now or never. So, I mean, I use similar, but there is hope, and I want you to understand, as far as we have gone beyond the barriers of the Constitution, as he is pointing out at this point, as far as they have gone, the federal government, outside the barriers of the Constitution today, where they're waging warfare and killing us, and this is not hyperbole, they're literally killing us. The chemtrails are causing people to die. They're causing health adversities where, people are, just slowly dying, as well as people literally dying from lack of energy because they're implementing energy solutions, where you can't have heat, where people died in Texas because they implemented those crappy solutions with solar and wind. The point is this, folks. The point is this, is that what Jefferson is saying may come across as hyperbole, because I know anybody with a critical ear might actually hear this and see this. But, and look today at how far and how resilient we still are as a nation, where the states are still the parties to this compact. In other words, the globalists have not effectively taken all of the powers from the states. They can't. The power still exists. And where does it exist? Either of you know?
In the legislatures?
It exists in the Constitution. because the Constitution, being the supreme law of the land, allows the state legislatures to use the Constitution as a weapon to remove these people who are violating their oath. So at this point in time, and I just want to help everybody understand this, Jefferson didn't have Section 3 of the 14th Amendment. I think things would have been a lot different had they did. However, I want everybody to understand this one thing, that the Constitution, the fact that we're still alive, that we still have this ability to pull us back from the brink, only speaks to his hand in giving us what we need in this Constitution, how even the dark, angel of death, or I should say Satan and his league that have been working to basically subjugate mankind, the fact that we still have the ability to thwart everything that they're trying to do only speaks to how divine this document is and how precious this is, the world's treasure, because the Constitution is the thing that can save everybody. Whether we act upon this or not is the question of a lifetime. It's a question, literally, of mankind's survival. Anyway, it sounds like hyperbole. Sounds like it's really out there, but if anybody understands where we are, what's happening, then, boy, I think I'm being pretty tame. Anyway, Sean, go ahead and pick it up from there, from public or personal. Thank you so much. Appreciate the pause.
That the friendless alien has indeed been selected as the safest subject of a first experiment, but the citizen will soon follow, or rather has already followed, for already has a sedition act marked him as its prey. That these and successive acts of the same character, unless arrested at the threshold, necessarily drive these states into revolution and blood, and will furnish new calumnies, is that calamities, against Republican government, a new pretext for those who wish it to be believed that man cannot be governed but by a rod of iron, that it would be a dangerous delusion were a confidence in the men of our choice to silence our fears for the safety of our rights, that confidence is everywhere the parent of despotism.
Okay, perfect spot to kind of pause, even though we still haven't really ended a sentence here. And let Tammy kind of take over this next one. Now, there's a lot of red to this towards the very end. And so let's go ahead and kind of read this precursor of little highlights and black and white. And then we'll get into, the red sections. Go ahead.
Okay. Free government is founded in jealousy and not in confidence. It is jealousy and not confidence which prescribes limited constitutions to bind down those whom are obligated to trust, who are obliged to trust with power, that our Constitution has accordingly fixed the limits to which, and no further, our confidence may go. And let the honest advocate of confidence read the Alien and Sedition Act, and say if the Constitution has not been wise in fixing limits to the government created, and whether we should be wise in destroying those limits, let him say what the government is, if it be not a tyranny which the men of our choice have conquered, unerred on our president, and the president of our choice has assented to and accepted over the friendly stranger to whom the mild spirit of our country and its law have pledged hospitality and protection, that the men of our choice have more respected the bare suspicion of the president than the solid right of innocence, the claims of justification, the sacred force of truth, and the forms and substance of law and justice. In questions of powers, then, let no more be heard of confidence in man, but rising down from this deep right.
Unfortunately, we'll have to kind of pick up where she left off, and so I didn't realize that we couldn't get it through in the amount of time. So, folks, we apologize. We'll come back where she has the respected and the bare suspicion of the president. So those of you reading along, we'll just kind of pick it up from there. And actually, we'll go a little further in front. We'll be right back.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
So I apologize, Tammy. Excuse me. I didn't realize that we wouldn't have the full time. So to kind of regain the steam you kind of created here, let's pick it up from after the pledge of hospitality and protection. And then so you'll just go ahead and start with that the men of our choice, and what you kind of hung up on was probably conquered. So whatever the original text was, it didn't translate well. Because if you go to the Avalon site, it'll actually come off as Con Aired. It's kind of like I noticed there was another thing that I ended up correcting because I knew it was just a typo up above. But anyway, those things happen with these types of documents. But if you notice, folks, go ahead. What's that?
It may be conferred.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Of our choice have conferred on our president, and the president of our choice has assumed.
Okay. That may be it. Yeah. All right. So go ahead and pick up with that the men of our choice. Go ahead.
Which the men of our choice have conferred on our president, and the president of our choice has assented to and accepted over the friendly stranger to whom the mild spirit of our country and its law have pledged hospitality and protection, that the men of our choice have more respected the bare suspicion of the president than the solid right of the innocent, the claims of justification, the sacred force of truth, and the forms and substance of law and justice. In questions of powers, then, let no more be heard of confidence in man, but bind him down from mischief by the change of the Constitution.
And there it is. That's a key line right there. To kind of close out, let there be no more confidence in man, but bind him down from mischief by the chains of the Constitution. That chains is his oath. They didn't have Section 3 of the 14th Amendment to literally use as teeth to basically destroy their future ever to serve in public service ever again. You know, it's kind of like... when a nation takes, you know, punishment of crime severely, you know, like cutting off a hand for stealing and or, you know, hanging for stealing a car. Well, in this nation, they used to hang you for stealing a horse. Well, I don't know what's much difference between a car and a horse. But anyway, the point is that if we actually started utilizing very severe punishments then to the law and held them to them, then I think what we would find is a better behaving public, right? Well, let's look at the lawmakers. If we're holding them equally accountable with very little mercy, then I think we would have much better lawmakers. Bind them down by the chains of the Constitution, right? Okay. So at this point, now we get into this really, really good long final, because that's the end of the sentence, by the way. Wow. Yeah. Actually, if you look, that was actually a sentence in itself. In questions of power, let no one. That's the beginning of the. It's a one, basically a line and a half sentence. See, he's capable of writing a short sentence. Anyway, and actually there's going down below this, because most all of these things, as far as punctuation, folks, you're going to see is either commas, semicolons, you know, colons, and so forth, or dashes. I'm surprised he didn't use the dot, dot, dots or anything like that. But anywho, let's dive into this final line right here, this final section of all red. Go ahead.
But this Commonwealth does therefore call on its co-states for an expression of their sentiments on the acts concerning aliens and for the punishment of certain crimes herein before specified, plainly declaring whether these acts are or are not authorized by the federal compact. And it doubts not that their sense will be so announced as to prove their attachment unaltered to limited government, whether general or particular.
Let me just go back.
The rights and liberties.
Let me go back. What he just said, what you just covered, and I'm actually going to change this color coding, that this one sentence that you started off with in this red, that this Commonwealth does now therefore call on its co-states for an expression of their sentiments. In other words, we want you to actually tell us, and whether you agree with us or not, regarding these acts concerning aliens and for the punishments of certain crimes herein before specified, plainly declaring whether these acts are or are not authorized by the federal compact. So this is their first question out to them. He's now asking these other states, what do you say? Okay?
Yeah, he's asking the states and not the court, which is very important.
Right, correct. Because the legislatures are the grandest court for the state itself. And see, our legislators don't even know that, because the court system and the judges have literally duped everybody into believing that they are the gods of America. Anyway, and so the next sentence, go ahead now.
And it doubts not that their sense will be so announced as to prove their attachment unaltered to limited government, whether general or particular, or that the rights and liberties of their co-states will be exposed to no dangers by remaining embarked in a common bottom with their own.
Now that's an interesting point that he makes here, that the rights and liberties of their co-states will be exposed to no dangers by remaining embarked in a common bottom. In other words, this common compact, this common foundation that we've all created, you know, basically he's saying with their own, so that we all have this same expectation that the government can only do these things. Okay, so go ahead.
Mm-hmm. That they will concur with this Commonwealth in considering the said acts as so palpably against the Constitution as to amount to an undisguised declaration that that compact is not meant to be the measure of the powers of the general government, but that it will proceed in the exercise over these states of all powers whatsoever, that they will view this as seizing the rights of the states and consolidating them in the hands of the general government with the power assumed to bind the states, not merely as the case is made federal.
Casus foederis. Yeah, go ahead.
Casus foederis. But in all cases whatsoever, by laws made, not with their consent, but by others against their consent, that this would be to surrender the form of government we have chosen and live under one deriving its powers from its own will and not from our authority.
Okay, so right there. So that's good right there.
Go ahead.
So right there, he basically said, you know, if we don't do this, then they are going to have this assurance that they can get away with anything, that they will basically have the full license and authority to decide what they want to do to us. That's kind of what he just did in what those 8, 9 lines or whatever we see there. And so up to that point from where you the last break we took. Okay, and so let's leave this last part here.
Okay. And that the co-states, recurring to their natural right in cases not made federal, will concur in declaring these acts void and of no force, and will each take measure of its own for providing that neither these acts nor any others of the general government not plainly and intentionally authorized by the Constitution shall be exercised within their respective territories.
Okay, so in other words, he's basically calling upon all of the states to nullify these laws together. Right here, the question is, why are they not pursuing the removal? Because he mentioned it before about removing these scoundrels from office. And at this point, that doesn't really come up again. And I think that the reason that doesn't come up again is because of the ambiguity of the system itself, where there's really no teeth. So in going through the Constitution, folks, for removal of a person of Congress, there is only one process in the Constitution at this point in time. And Sean, do you remember, is it two-thirds or three-fourths of the body of the House in question, at the House of Representatives? It's a threshold, a fraction, two-thirds or something like that, that by a vote of two-thirds, they can expel a member. At this point, the only way that the states could actually remove somebody from Congress on their own is to charge them with treason. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I was going to ask, so what is the point of the oath if there's no way to enforce it?
Ah, well, so there is a way of enforcing it, whether they use treason as the crime, because if you're deliberately running an insurrection against the Constitution, because remember, how many people, again, were convicted of treason in the Whiskey Rebellion?
Two.
So I believe that they could easily get people in Congress to probably can be convicted, but here's the problem. Who has jurisdiction over the federal, or over treason against the U.S. Constitution? We covered this. Yes, the federal courts. So, in other words, the federal courts will actually, you know, entertain and actually seat and control that. They have full jurisdiction over treason against the U.S. Constitution. Now, treason against the states, if the states actually had in their constitution that if you violated the U.S. Constitution as a representative, we will hold you to treason against our state. In other words, they have this clause in there that for you to go to Congress before, you know, you can be seated or what have you, this oath will be implied that, you know, we'll come after you if you violate your oath. Anyway, but that's still fishy, if you understand what I'm saying, because there's still this indemnity that they have at this point in time. The need for Section 3 of the 14th Amendment becomes this big, huge red zit on the nose of the federal government. Everybody's looking at it. They go, what are we going to do? How do we? We're dependent on the integrity and the character of the men in these offices. This goes back to that other document that we read that says, hey, we got to remember that we have to elect the most virtuous men, period. If we don't, then we could have a very scandalous government. Does that help?
Yes, sir. I was just wondering if there was some established definition or explanation that goes along with in Article 6. The senators and representatives shall be bound by oath and affirmation.
Yes. And
so if they're bound by something, there must be some method of enforcing that.
Right. So here's the thing. In these days, when somebody impugned a man's character, they could actually challenge you to a duel. That was the law, that you could defend your honor with a duel. And so people were kind of slow and apprehensive in, you know, holding people accountable, especially if this is one of the reasons why people that didn't do a lot of marksmanship and, you know, weapons handling and target practice and that type of thing, that they would be less likely to say offensive things because they wouldn't want to be called into a duel because it could be death to them. And so instead of having a gun and spending time, you know, developing that skill to defend oneself so that you could actually stand up and call scoundrels scoundrels, you know,
right.
What ended up happening is our standards and our morals, because we didn't want to be held accountable, that we could actually start flinging insults at each other and get away with it. Well, that's why they started outlawing and removing accountability. The only thing that was really that meant anything in these early days of the Constitution of this Republic was the honor and integrity of a man's word and his name, which is why they would actually, you know, challenge you to a duel to defend their honor and name. This is when honor and your name meant more to that person than life itself. But we now had a level of corruption where people were willing to actually even compromise their integrity, the integrity of their character and of their name. That, you know, hey, you know, integrity, you know, is a nice thing, but it doesn't put more fish on the table. It doesn't, you know, put more logs, you know, outside to, you know, to keep warm with. You know what I'm saying? In other words, it doesn't bring any bacon home. There's no money in integrity. And they started realizing that corrupting and being corruptible became a very profitable industry, to the point that people that are seeking, I wonder, you know, every time I see somebody that's running for Congress, the House of Representatives, I believe I'm looking at a person that only cares about becoming a millionaire. And they may be in there, they may be doing really good because they know that they're protected. Like Harriet Hageman, she is out there and she's, you know, she's like a gunslinger, what have you. She seems to be doing good, but she misses so many key constitutional points. And I'm, you know, I know she's the beloved of Wyoming. And I know that there's probably a lot of people that are going to listen to this show from Wyoming. But I would love to see her actually start taking constitutional positions instead of the status quo, you know, good conservative, you know, less government, but still government. She's not going after, you know, the BLM, you know, assuming land and so forth, when she should actually be saying, you have no authority to have this land, BLM. You have no authority to have this land, you know, park and recreations. There's lots of things that she could literally be doing, and she's safe. And what do I mean by that? I believe the more stringent she becomes, the more beloved she'll become, and she'll be reelected and reelected and reelected. Am I wrong or am I right?
No, yeah.
Okay.
Totally right.
And so she would be safe. So why isn't she doing this? Because maybe her aspirations are becoming the first woman president.
Maybe if she strays from the narrative and the air quotes conservative talking points and starts talking about real constitutional compliance, then the party will turn on her, like we've seen with a lot of candidates.
Okay,
where so they try to be too strict and they don't go along with the game.
That's a good point. But I hate to cut you off, but the reality is the party actually is in a position of demanding more compliance. Just so you know, Tammy is the chair of the Republic Review Committee for the state party. In other words, this is the only state that is trying to get the state legislature to doing exactly what Jefferson and Madison are doing here, and actually calling for Republic Review, calling for the government to get the heck out of getting their knickers out of all of these things they have no business being involved in. So in this is why I say in Wyoming, she is protected. She could literally.
But in Washington, she's not.
You know what? My point is this, that most people would see her as maybe a pariah in the swamp, If she really took the, look at what Ron Paul did and what a hero Ron Paul did, and he fell far short of really, he's done more in standing up on the Constitution than Harriet. In all truth, when you really look, Ron Paul and Rand Paul, nobody's perfect, especially in my eyes because I'm very critical. But my point is that she could actually create a new, she could take all the Ron Paul libertarians and constitutional lovers and galvanize them and unite them and actually make, really convert the Republican Party into demanding and loving the Constitution. She could be that person. She could be the, I'm trying to think of a female.
She could 100% be that person. People respect her so greatly.
Well, so David. I think that she could be like America's Thomas Jefferson in leading, you know, this Renaissance movement of restoring and reclaiming the Constitution and the Republic. She could actually be. Yeah. She could be that person. I know a lot of people that have been in politics the past couple of decades in Wyoming, just because of the opportunity, the blessings I've had in working with people in Wyoming. They're great. I want to consider myself a Wyomingite, but, you know, maybe someday posthumously I'll be considered a Wyomingite. To me, that would be a great honor. But all things being said, Taylor Haynes was another constitutional. He's a man of letters, but he's also a medical doctor. He is a brilliant man that was going to, and actually we were supporting his candidacy for governor because he was the one that was actually the most constitutional, with supporting Republic Review, all of these things. Great man. He could have easily become the governor and could have easily become that guy that would lead America. You know, this dream of one person being able to help wake up everybody to say, it's not about me, it's about the Constitution. Because when you make it about something far greater than you, then it's easy for you to become that messenger. So anyway, I saw Taylor Haynes as somebody in great, Harriet's in a great position. She is. She could literally do some beautiful work. I'd love to help her. I'd love to work with her. But the problem is that, you know, she still has these legal ties as a lawyer and so forth, and sometimes they just won't want to cross those lines. I don't know. But I do believe that her aspirations and her love of this country and her love of liberty is greater than probably her love of the Bar Association. And I would love to see her actually, yeah, you know, go out there. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so yeah. Why doesn't she? Well, that would be the question.
So here's
I'm not trying to get on her because I don't know that much about her. You guys obviously have more inside information. I've seen her and I've heard her speak, and I agree with what you're saying. But my question is not just for her, but for others as well. Why, when they get to Washington, does all of that end? And they don't stand up and say these things are wrong. They're obviously very intelligent people, and they might be illiterate on the Constitution, but how did they get as far as they have in government service being that illiterate? You know what I'm talking about?
Okay.
How does that happen? There's got to be compromise somewhere along the line,
okay.
And where does that lay, and how do we address that?
Okay, I can answer that question, and then I'll let Tammy correct me if I add to. Illiteracy on the Constitution is so rampant that even people that really feel like they know the Constitution, they love the Constitution, and this immigration is one of those issues. That's just only one of the many issues that people have completely obscured. They've just embraced, like the Department of Transportation. People have completely embraced these overreaches that's their job. Even though there's no amendment, there's no delegated authority for them to be doing it. And the question is, couldn't we do better as states in doing those things for ourselves instead of letting them continue to violate the Constitution? So my point is this, is that, you know, reasonable people, equally informed, seldom disagree. And I believe Harriet is a very reasonable person. Is she equally informed? Nobody wants to admit that they don't know some of these nuances, because I'm telling you, when you really look at immigration, most people confuse that a uniform rule of naturalization as authority of managing immigration, when that wasn't what the point of that clause was. To make sure that when the states were making U.S. citizens, that they would make them on the same criteria so that everybody would have the same level of, you know, I'll just say the same standard, the same bar to be able to, you know, get across or to do. So the ensuring that the quality of the citizen didn't, you know, get really bad in these states like California and be really good in the other states like Wyoming. So the point is that sometimes people start recognizing that when you start recognizing there's a lot of things you don't know, the smart person, the smart leader goes out and grabs that person that does know, and they bring them in and they empower them to help them. You know, when you look at Washington, Washington didn't understand the Constitution, but he tried to surround himself with great leaders. He didn't know Hamilton was a spy. He knew Jefferson was a prominent leader, and one of the things that just bothered him was the way these guys went at it, at each other. He was so fed up with Jefferson and Madison, and even eventually Hamilton, because these guys just couldn't get along and work together. That's what he wanted, but he didn't see Hamilton being the creature that he was, because he loved Hamilton like his son. His bias on Hamilton was so, it polluted him so much that it possessed him. He gave Hamilton more credentials and more credit in some cases than Jefferson, and in other cases than Madison. One of the things I'll say, because in Ron Chernow's book that elevates Hamilton to this godlike man, it states that George Washington's farewell address was written by Hamilton. There's no evidence of that. It's just an assertion that he's made. Now, we do know that when George Washington was considering not running for a second time, he went to Madison and asked him to help him write a farewell address. So we know formally he possessed a farewell address that Madison had written. We know he had that. There's no evidence, nowhere where we have anything that he had a farewell address written and provided by Hamilton. At least, I've never seen that evidence. It's just a claim, no academic support. And the real reason, and to me, the proof in the pudding is what Washington says. Washington literally says not to allow implications to be used to actually violate the Constitution. Washington says we must amend the Constitution first before we nobly, you know, go beyond it, because that is the process of how constitutions of governments are destroyed. Folks, we'll bring this back up. We'll revisit this and Harriet and so forth in our next episode, our next show. I'm Jer Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the republic review model, on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.